TKF United.
Hello, and thanks for listening to TKF United, Stadium Talk That Rocks. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, Nick, how you doing? Snapdragon is built and ready to go. Ready for a soccer team.
Yeah. Snapdragon is the center of the San Diego sports universe because I don't know what they're doing at Petco right now. That is that's for another podcast, I think.
Yes. The hot mess that is the
not treating us very well.
No, in fact, they're treating us maybe the worst they've ever treated us, which is weird,
and we can't,
to say the
we
least.
We can't be mad about them not spending money anymore. That's the hardest part. We can't just complain about them not trying. They it turns out you can try and it still cannot work out. That's the
or you can spend money, but that doesn't necessarily correlate to trying. Because the ownership might be trying, but the players are not.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot more going on in the San Diego sports universe. And tonight we wanted to talk to DK Aniwo about the soccer community and some of the stadium talk or arena talk that's going on around the Midway District. What's going on, DK?
Hello. Good evening. Great to be back here, guys.
Yeah. A lot's changed since the last time we talked. San Diego has an MLS team. And Stan Kroenke's getting in the mix as far as the arenas stuff or the Midway Rising, Midway mm-hmm. Development Project. We'll get to that in a bit. But what was your reaction to the announcement last month that the MLS was coming?
Yeah, when it came out last month, I'd sort of known about it for a little bit. So my reaction is almost more like cautious observation of everyone else's reaction. Mm-hmm. Although to be fair, when I did first kind of realize it was really happening, I think my initial action was like, oh shit, like it's real. There's for sure like, you know, mixed emotions, because not that long ago, what, 4 or 5 years ago, a lot of us were saying a lot of things, and now those things seem to come true in ways we didn't think were possible. So yeah, it's been complex these last few weeks and months.
Well, yeah. So if we take it back to the origin of TKF United was the election in 2018 where Soccer City SD and SDSC West clashed famously on this podcast feed. And we brought both sides in.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's one of my favorite San Diego sports stories of my lifetime. Wow. I really loved it. I love picking it apart, but you know, it turns out it sounds like the SDSU West people, most of everything that they've said came true. We ended up getting an MLS team, and shout out to those really well-adjusted, cool people that were so nice during that whole process. For you guys were right. It has, you know, the Snapdragon has opened. We're here. The Wave have been successful, and MLS coming soon. And what is, you know, in the ashes of the San Diego sport, San Diego Soccer City SD movement, you know, arose the Loyal, and they're here. They've been here. They've built a really intense fan base over the last 4 years. I noticed, you know, and we talked about this before recording, that there was a reaction from those hardcore fans about the MLS coming and what this would do to their community. And I mean, do you think that is a real threat to what has already been built?
I would say not a threat to the community, maybe a threat to San Diego Loyal's like ability to become MLS themselves. Sure. Hmm. And I would say that, you know, to kind of pare that even down further, there's probably some, you know, sizable segment of the like Loyal community, the locals in particular. The locals, I think, in particular, are the most interesting sort of talking point in all this, right? Because that's like the official club recognized fan group. It's a lot of those folks who are sort of like part of the leadership and have spent like a lot of time over the last few years. Like, I think a lot of their energy was always geared towards supporting Loyal to the point where like Loyal themselves could attract an investor and go MLS. And so it's not so much that like it threatens unity, and it's not so much that I think it really threatens Loyal's existence, but for everyone who was a fan of Loyal because of like the hope you could become if they like as an organization had that sort of like, I don't know, that Cinderella story of growing into that next level. Yeah, that probably took some time to getting used to, right? Like that stung for me, frankly, and for a lot of folks.
Was that always the goal, is that this would be so successful as a USL team that they could, you know, get an investor and then just be, promoted is the right word, but like join the MLS.
It was one of those like whisper quietly type goals, right? I think for the sake of the folks who were participating in like definitely like that first season, I think they called it Team One, right? And a lot of those early stage things, if you set your sights on something like MLS from day one, you to a certain extent are looking for like too far down the runway and not enough like at what's directly in front of you. So from like a club official standpoint, talking to the players and the coaching staff and, you know, even the front office, like they would never really say it early on, but very clearly, right, when you look at like who was involved in like the starting of Loyal, and like I'm talking about like Warren Smith, right, and someone who has a track record of growing USL teams into MLS teams, like that was probably, you know, behind like the math that we kind of put up of saying, no, let's just focus on USL for now.
And was there a feeling, you know, the Wave come into Snapdragon, and they were at USD first, and then they went to Snapdragon, and you know, it had this big opening game and a few big sellout games, and was there a feeling that there was like people, you know, they were kind of standing on the shoulders of what the locals and the Loyal had built, or is it that fractured?
I wouldn't say that was the feeling when Wave came in, and what's interesting is I feel as though definitely if you start talking about like the supporters, like clubs and like, you know, the official groups, I think for Wave, I shouldn't say I think, I'm a member, I know, the official group is called the Sirens, right? And a lot of the folks who are involved in that, they might go to Loyal games, but they're not necessarily part of like the locals leadership. And I'd say vice versa. So like different audiences to a certain extent, I think different, obviously like product, if you will, different narrative, different story. And so there wasn't a ton of like competition. I'd say actually there's a lot of folks who probably are season ticket members of both teams. And, you know, maybe somewhere in the ticketing department of one of those teams or both of those teams, there's some competition of like, you know, disposable income amongst the people. But realistically, like for those of us who sit in the stands, it's like, hey, more soccer, better.
I mean, I guess that you could, if the MLS team comes and the Wave are here, and I mean, is it really a threat to USL really be able to maintain if this is a sizable audience that has, you know, I guess a level above USL, is it really a threat, or is it more like, you know, you can just have the locals or the Loyal experience at USD, and that's just fun, you know? I don't know.
I think like the real like sort of like almost like not like missing part of that question is like defining who the threat is to, right? Like realistically, I mean, I could go and watch Loyal games at Torero forever and I'd have a great time. I'd pay the money, right? But I think the way that the team is set up at Torero, right, they're tenants. They're not the like the owners or the primary people. They don't have the priority when it comes to picking dates, right? I think a portion of every ticket goes to subsidize like the free parking that they offer. So like, you know, there's like a number of different reasons why like overall Loyal playing at Torero was always going to be some version of temporary. I think obviously you saw Loyal, they got involved in the Sports Arena redevelopment contest, right? And there was a modular stadium for them. And you know, I think for a long time, you know, watching Snapdragon get built as quickly as it did, Loyal thought, okay, if we can't build it ourselves in Midway, then for sure we'll transition at least into a bigger venue where, okay, like it might be more expensive, but like there's more heads. Like, you know, basically you can right size that budget. But you know, you hear different numbers. I've heard numbers like $2 or $3 million per year that the team was losing. I've heard upwards of 6 or 7. I think that was embellished, you know, based on the person who was saying that number, or at least heavily weighted. But yeah, the owner of the club itself was probably losing money. And so you're willing to do that for a period of time if you feel as though maybe one day you can get that buyout and like take this team to the MLS level. And with that being closed off, it's not like, oh, MLS being here by itself is like inherently a threat or a risk to Loyal, but it's like almost like a business decision of like, all right, am I going to lose, you know, 2, 3, however many millions of dollars per year, like forever, you know, or if, like how long do I want to do that for? I just pack it in. And I think that's a threat that people like allude to. Maybe I don't even know how many people really have like articulated or like really the league will pull out, or you know, the coaching staff will quit one day because it's like, oh, I want to go work over there. Like, it's more a question of like, does the owner want to continue bleeding money with no like potential route towards recouping most of it?
Right. And was there a moment in the process where they, where it was obvious that this ownership group that owns the Loyal was not going to be the one that transitions to, they were going to expand and not just promote a USL team? I mean, like, was that like a year ago?
Or, yeah. You hear different things. Some things that I've heard are as recently as like, yeah, like within like 2 weeks before the actual announcement in May.
Oh, okay.
But then some things you hear are like years ago, that, you know, sort of a fork in the road was reached and some people went this way and some people went that way. And some people are with Loyal and some people are with MLS now.
What, how much longer will the Loyal be at USD? Is that open-ended or are they?
Yeah, no, I believe they had originally a 3-year contract with like two individual like option years. So for like basically a fourth and a fifth option. And this is year four.
Okay.
So to my knowledge, they've got an option for next year as well. And I don't know if it's like the university pulls the option or the club or they have to mutually, like, I don't know like if there's an exit there, but they've got this season for sure. And honestly, all of 24, which is interesting because this MLS team doesn't start kicking off until 25.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. From kind of being on the outside of it, it just seemed like I figured just more soccer would be better for everybody in the community. But I understand what the work that everybody's done with the locals and have really just to have that kind of that end goal to go to the MLS being taken out from under you is kind of,
yeah,
and like, it's disheartening, right? I mean,
yeah. And it happened, I think, like really abruptly for a lot of people, you know, because it went from, you know, it was San Diego periodically. I feel like there's always an MLS rumor, expansion rumor. Like we're always like, it's like a quarterly basis. We get an update. We're in there. Right. And then it kind of went from that normal cadence of, oh yeah, maybe one day to like, actually maybe kind of soon. And then like, oh yeah, that happened. And I don't think that the majority of people had time to really like, one, see it coming, or two, like brace themselves, or, and also like, there hasn't really been like a public statement that I know of. I mean, other than I think the Loyal put out something like a week or so before the MLS announcement, but up until then, it's only really been Mark Ziegler who's been drip feeding us this information. And so, yeah, I mean, well, I suspect that people have now calmed. But we'll see what winds up happening when this MLS thing kicks off, because it's definitely a different product.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what other option, if they decided they didn't want to stay at Torero Stadium, and then they try to build like a kind of what the Soccers are doing up in North County and have their own stadium that's maybe about comparable size, but I don't know if that's, if they're not making, if they're hemorrhaging money every year, is that even feasible to do that? I don't know how the Soccers are doing it, honestly.
Yeah. Good point. And I feel like that's kind of almost what you have to imagine comes next, right? Like, use the time that they have before this almost thing actually kicks off to at least plot a path forward.
Yeah.
I've seen, I think there was like a news, something on Chula Vista down on the bayfront. I don't know if there's like smoke to that.
Yeah, part. Yeah.
But obviously, yeah. Oceanside, you remember 1904? Right? They had a modular stadium up in Oceanside. And that's, I don't think it's the exact same plot where the Soccers are. It's like across the street. It's on that same kind of complex there. It's like, in theory, you know, if they can work something out with the people up there, there is, I guess, hope, or at least some version of like opportunity for them to continue existing for sure, with like a different like feeling or flair, probably. If they wind up moving further north or further south, you imagine they'd sort of pivot to market to more local audiences, people who aren't maybe going to make it down into Mission Valley on a weekly basis. But I don't know, that's like it's like a front office question that like I haven't gotten like a direct answer to, because I've for sure asked that question. I was like, what are we doing, guys? And it's like, yeah, we'll let you know.
I mean, what's the overall opinion of like soccer fans? You know, I know that the MLS is world on the global stage. It's not, you know, the best league, obviously, but is there, for hardcore soccer people, is it like, well, it's just the MLS. We shouldn't act like it's this big of a deal. USL has been welcoming to us. And, you know, is there like a loyalty to that brand of soccer or anything like that?
I feel like yes and no. I mean, I think to be fair, like honestly, like a real true, like hardcore soccer fan, like what I would consider like the refined soccer enthusiast, right? Mm-hmm. Those of us with real, like, most of us don't even watch MLS, right? It's like, hey, we watch the Premier League, we watch Bundesliga, we watch, you know, Champions League, etc. You know, or we play FIFA with our favorite teams, and like I promise you, I played with FIFA once with an MLS team, and it's because I got I lost a bet. I wouldn't say that honestly. Like the gap between USL to MLS is so much greater or different. Like as far as quality of play, it's like the gap between MLS and like the rest of the world is a larger delta, right? So like. For me, I think what appeals to me about Loyola and what appeals to me about having just like a local team is that it is my local team. I can rock up, I can show up, you know, with my, you know, friends, family, whoever, say hello to the people who are at the gate every single weekend because it's the same dude every week. You know, feeling like there is that sense of like camaraderie or community where like I know if I go to Coronado Brewing the day before, like the day of a Loyola game, you know, 2-3 hours before kickoff, there's gonna be a mob of people. It's that kind of sort of like cultural community, like ritual stuff that I think like I wouldn't even say it's different between USL and MLS. I feel like that's kind of what I enjoy about having a team here. Yeah. So like, will the average soccer fan or the average San Diegan like see a huge difference in like quality of product on the field? No, I feel like Loyola played pretty attractive soccer. It's really more so just like the packaging, the product, and sort of like how they, I mean, obviously it's the better players. Like, not joke about that. They're better players. And to be fair, Messi just, I guess, is joining this Miami team. So like definitely like higher profile, like higher level of visibility, but it'll be interesting to see how these next few years play out for me, at least for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like the MLS has always been like the place for the great players in Europe come over, or, you know, the guys from the Premier League, they come over when they're washed, not that Messi's washed, but like it's the twilight and they come and it's a big deal, but then it turns out to not be a big deal. I don't know. I have the opinion that like I don't know a whole lot about MLS, but I've been watching from afar and seeing that there's a lot of markets that really do well. I have a friend that lives in Atlanta and he says it's like really hard to get a ticket to Atlanta, to the Atlanta team. And I have a friend in San Jose who goes pretty regularly and it's just a blast. It's his kid's favorite thing to do in the Bay Area sports wise. You know, we're going to talk about the Stan Kroenke stuff in a minute, but like all these things with sports, it does feel like it just takes one crazy billionaire to change things. And I mean, to me, it feels like in our lifetime, the MLS, if they make the right decisions, they could have this whole billionaire class taking over franchises and really throwing money at the top players in the world in my lifetime. This take decades to really evolve into, but I mean, do you think that's possible? Like having this league evolve as a top soccer league, maybe not the top, but like something that would compete with the European leagues or, the other leagues that throw real money at the top athletes. I mean, I just think there's going to be this group of billionaires that can't get into the NBA, can't get into the MLB. They can't buy an NFL team, but they still want to buy a team. And if it's on the rise, like, I don't know, maybe it's just a great thing for San Diego to get into now. I don't know.
Well, to be fair, I mean, I'd say even just like the last 10 years alone, MLS has come a long way. USL has come a long way in the last 10 years in particular. Like I think soccer in general in this country is establishing itself more and more, almost to the extent where like even some of those billionaires, like it might not be they can't get in the NFL, they can't get in the MLB. It's like they just would rather get into soccer. Yeah. It's more.
Well, LAFC was really eye-opening to me, just how fast it like exploded. Yeah. You know, that got me excited. I don't know.
And what's interesting, I think actually I don't know how many like people have connected all the dots, but like the gentleman who was the, I think, president of LAFC when they launched is the same guy who's like lined up as CEO of this San Diego team when they launched. So like, I feel like they know a thing or two of how to launch or how to integrate. I think that's kind of like the point that you were making is that in other markets, whether it's Atlanta or, you know, San Jose, Seattle, et cetera, there's all kinds of, like the teams do well in a lot of these markets, right? That's all largely a function of like ownership and front office of any given franchise, how they decide to commit to community. I think that was like one of the bigger questions that a lot of us had when we heard about the San Diego team and like who all was going to be involved. Cause it's like, is this one of those like cool billionaires who like splashes the cash? Or is this one of those like weird billionaires who like moves money around and there's like shell companies and stuff, right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'd say that, like, you know, one of the reasons that I've been honestly like really excited about this MLS expansion, despite the fact that it might, you know, upset the balance or shift the balance for sure in town, is that you look at like the actual ownership. It's like, okay, this Mansoor fella, not, you know, we don't know too much about him. But what I would say is that everything I've seen from like the Right to Dream Foundation that he funds and like where they've put their money so far, and a lot of that just seems to me to give me like some, I guess, confidence or like hope that this, like, the quality of soccer that we play will be good, right? The soccer side of things. And then like the Saquon ban, like that's obviously about as OG San Diego as you can get. Like, if nothing else, like I do think that that all coupled with the fact that like the next World Cup is actually in the United States in 2026. Uh-huh. Right. So it's not lost on me that this MLS team is playing in 25 because of, or at least like, you know, they're aware of the fact that the World Cup's in 26. So it helps if you can get out in front of that competition and really ride that wave. I think if you look at like a lot of where players from South and Central America, like, you know, are starting to come more and more into the league, and like I said, the quality of play has improved quite a bit over the last few years. And I only continue to see it growing when you start to add these types of operators to what we're seeing here in San Diego.
Yeah. Well, the guy who did the, I mean, the people that got LAFC, just the starter, you know, they should just be starting every new franchise, basically. I mean, I don't know how that was amazing. But this is something we're going to be following up until, you know, the first, you know, kickoff, I guess, when they get it going in 25. But the other big thing that happened in stadium talk news and arena talk news, I guess it was last week or 2 weeks ago, but the Stan Kroenke from the Kroenke Group has invested into Midway Rising, the plan that has been selected to figure this whole thing out. So we're about six months into this 2-year process, right?
Roughly, yep.
And now we have a kind of a game-changing investor who's going to take, I guess, 90 to 95%, or gradually to 95%
upon completion
of everything. And he has a track record. Stan Kroenke is the guy who owns the Rams, the Denver Nuggets, the Avalanche in Colorado. And he moved the Rams from St. Louis to L.A. And our friend Dean Spanos is his tenant. So he's just running Southern California in development and sports, and he's investing in San Diego. So what walk us through that news, how that hit you, and how was that day when you found out?
it was weird. I you know, so obviously I live a few blocks from the arena. I do all the planning group stuff. I'm on the email list, I'm pretty sure, for the Midway Rising and all that. But I got a call, I think the Friday before the Monday, saying like, hey, we have a big announcement, we have a big press conference, we'd really, really love it if you could be there, but we just can't tell you what's going on. And I was like, what? Okay. I asked them, am I allowed to guess? And they said, no, just show up. I said, okay. Obviously, come to find out, it's this whole thing. And like, not only does he own all those teams you mentioned, he owns the Colorado Rapids, which is an MLS team.
Yeah.
He owns Arsenal Football Club of the Premier League as well. So just like, my reaction is like, okay, this is a serious man. It's weird, like how they made such a, I shouldn't say weird, but like, it's interesting. They made a big deal about the announcement. Hey, we've got this new equity partner. It's this. But then you start talking to like the team or like the real estate assets folks at the city. And it's like, all right, so what's changing? And they're like, nothing really. We're just like more confident now. Right, it's like there's less risk in the project, and it's like, okay, like, I mean, maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm, you know, optimistic, but like, I don't feel like I was that worried before, and so like to become even more not worried feels great, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's the craziest thing about this story. It's this was the plan that was chosen, and everybody had confidence in it, But then this happens, and everybody's acting like, well, this is real confident. No, we're like really confident now. Yeah. What were you guys? What was happening before when you guys chose this? Because now I don't know. It's hard to get information out of it, but like it does feel like people weren't exactly. They weren't, or people were trying to. People were really trying to. I don't know who they were, but it sounds like from Jen Vangrove, I heard her on Darren Smith. Mm-hmm. She was talking about how people were trying to like basically trash the group that had been selected and that there should be a lack of confidence. But I guess Stan Kroenke is just, he sees it as a really great opportunity, which it is. I mean, it's a great piece of land that he could do a lot with. And we've all kind of known that for a long time. And even
for me, with the sort of added perspective that I have of like the Midway community writ large, and the fact that like the height limit for the entire community has been removed, I think, yeah, it's interesting to see this specific development, but I'm looking at like the ripple effect, or like who else is doing what else. Uh-huh. You know, most of the property that's in and around that sports scene that's like not the city owned stuff, that's all privately held, right? Uh-huh. And those parcels could in theory be redeveloped based off that new community plan from a few years back. And so I think what I'm hopeful for actually really is that like there's so much confidence from this like announcement that other property owners who have maybe been like waiting in the wings or like trying to take a tack off of what happens at the arena, like, so you know what, screw it, like I'd rather get ahead of it and start building something now, or start like building something that's complementary to what's going to actually be there. That's my hope, really, is that we start to see more of a transformation over the wider Midway neighborhood.
Yeah, and this plan was selected because it offered the most affordable housing of the plans that were lined up. And, you know, from all indications, it sounds like that's going to be honored, obviously. That's the big selling point of it. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, for sports fans, it does seem like, you know, this got our gears grinding. I mean, I was ready to buy a Nuggets jersey. I'm like, oh, the Nuggets are coming to San Diego.
It's kind of nice that like they made the announcement like that.
Yeah, right? I mean, the Nuggets are coming. That's but why are you playing Mile High basket cardio? You know, high cardio sports. Let's get sea level.
Yeah, it doesn't get better. It's real nice down here.
Take that championship energy to San Diego. It'll be fine.
I have a quick question for you guys, because I know, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think any of us are NHL like aficionados, but someone help me understand what's going on with Arizona. The Coyotes, they have no place to play. I keep hearing too.
Well, the Arizona sports, I mean, the Diamondbacks have a relatively new stadium, and it's a mess over there too. Like nobody wants to put money into it. I haven't followed like the Coyotes are playing at Arizona State now, and the Suns are like the primary tenant there, and they don't get along with the NHL there, I guess. And so they had to move out, and it's not successful. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's, they have a couple, their stadium talk podcast must be pretty great. The Phoenix one. Cause the baseball stadium is like, it was like, I think it's like built in 97 or something like that. And they're already like, they might get rid of it, or the city and the team don't want to put money into it, essentially. And it's a mess there. And then in that whole district there, there's also the arena, and the Coyotes, I guess, have just been a disaster. So, and I don't care about hockey really. So, but I mean, if they came, I would just give myself over to it, I guess, finally. But yeah, I don't know. So that one, yeah, the NHL, NBA, I'd like to get one of those, but you know, it sounds like this plan is, they're kind of being careful with the language about it, right? They're basically saying this would be a state-of-the-art arena that would be designed for events and concerts. It would be nice if we had a team come, but they're not really planning around that.
No, literally, so it's funny, yesterday the real estate assets department gave like their quarterly update to city council. So I listened to most of that, and they really, like I said, like described this as great for like the confidence of the project, but nothing is substantively changing so far based off of this alone, or this addition to the team alone. 16,000 seats is kind of like the game plan. And then literally earlier today, we had our Midway like planning group monthly meeting. And so they had, you know, someone from the team kind of saying that same thing of like, there is absolutely no plan to bring a team here at this time. And I love when they say at this time, because it's like, that's just, it covers you for like up until the moment that the word is finishing coming out of your mouth. But like next week, a month from now, a year from now, you know, plans change.
Well, so that's how sports is, though. Like, they don't, I mean, especially it's like professional team sports. It's just, you know, we hear this all the time. When the Chargers left, it was like, well, we'll never get an NBA team. We'll never get an NHL team. It just takes like one crazy billionaire just to write a check, and you can, it can change. Like everything can change.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, I mean, I feel like to a certain extent, you almost do need to like pause and tip your cap to like the folks at SDSU, right? At the end of the day, you build a new modern facility and, you know, there's a market or an appetite for something to fill it. Turns out things can happen, right? And so, like, you know, credit where credit's due. They've
on
the software, and I think if we bring in like a brand new arena, and you know, to be fair, they're like, oh, the Snapdragon doesn't have the canopies, or it's too big, or it's too small, or this and that. You build something new, and I think honestly, to a certain degree, like I have a lot of confidence, like that the Legend Stadium or arena would be like even more cool than what we have in Mission Valley. Who knows, right?
Who knows? I mean, it just seems like it has to happen eventually. I mean, I love the old girl Pechanga, but it's you know, it's getting it's time, I think, eventually, you know. But I wonder, like, so he's basically, you know, the Kroenke group, they're going to basically get, they're going to invest up to like 95% of it, and then
So basically what I understand is like, it's like they're just like responsible for like all the costs of everything, and it's like, you know, they're going to, I mean, the way, and you're right, like I think the UT has like a weird, like a really interesting graphic of like how the different entities and companies and LLCs like fit together. But basically, like the Legends folks, the Zephyr folks who have been running day to day on the point, like that's not changing. The project management team's not changing. I think it's just like the bank account that like the tab is coming off of is just a lot deeper. And then ultimately, right? And then obviously like the benefit for him and all that is that when the revenues start getting generated, he's entitled to that 90% share or 95% share of, you know, the proceeds, I would imagine.
Yeah. So we have the back. So say we have a really solid backing. we thought we had backing, but now we have real backing. Mm-hmm. But so is the height limit thing over?
Sorted, for sure. I mean, technically not. But there's still pending litigation.
Are you going to be at PolitiFest next year, like smoking some dude who's like, we gotta worry about the people that want to come down to the ocean? You know?
Golly, I really hope not. I really hope not. I think they're doing PolitiFest this year, too, just like to keep everyone smart. Because the primaries in March. But no, like we should be I mean, I don't know, I can't speak, right? Because I thought I was confident last time, and then it turns out I was made to feel a fool. But realistically, they haven't docketed a date for the second lawsuit to even be heard yet. So once they do that, then we'll get a sense for at least when we'll be able to put this question to bed. I can't imagine that twice in back-to-back years, you know, both presidential and midterm elections, when this thing passes, that they're going to overturn it again. But you know, I'm not a lawyer, so we'll see.
Yeah. I think Stan Kroenke, he'll be on the golf course with the right guy. And just
there's a part of me that
vaguely threaten him. You know,
talk about confidence, really. It's that kind of confidence where it's like, you know, this guy not only has a reputation for doing things, you know, paying out of pocket, getting them. It's like, you don't get involved with like a situation that is like risky of like, oh, well, if this thing gets overturned, like basically the entire project kind of like goes away, right? Like it goes upside down. Like there is more confidence, right? That I think a lot of us should be able to take from the fact that this guy's involved now, because realistically, like it puts us in a position where, assuming that all goes well and there's, you know, nothing extenuating, we could be talking about breaking ground in a few years here.
Yeah. So at the end of the 2 year, at the end of, so how does this, the timeline work? It's just finalized and then they can start digging?
Yeah, there's a couple things like even within these next 2 years. So basically like this first 6 months or so has been all about like doing what they call site due diligence. So basically like making sure they know like where the gas cans are and like where all the routes and like the sewer lines and whatever. you know, fault lines, all of it. That deadline to complete like their process is July 31st. From there, they basically have to put all of that together in like what's called a project description. And that's like a really formal, like specific document. And that's due to the city by the end of October. So basically when they turn in that project description, and then they'll have like with that, like all of their funding components, and basically saying specifically like how they mean to pay for what, that's when they start like the CEQA for the project itself, the environmental process for the project itself. And the idea is that all that's done by the end of the 2-year ENA. And that when they're done with all that, they basically take whatever additional costs or mitigations are taken from the environmental document. And then they like agree terms to a lease with the city.
Oh man.
So then it just keeps going and going and going.
Could there be another loss?
These next 2 years themselves.
I mean,
I don't want to jinx anything.
There will be a lawsuit. There will be.
I have to, you know.
Yeah.
This is California, right?
Yeah.
That's how we
exactly.
Do
well, yeah. Sounds like we're gonna be Nuggets fans in 2027, and that'll be the last Padres podcast I do. Well, this is exciting stuff, DK. I want to check in with you throughout the process and just see what's in that. You know, I was excited by the MLS coming just because it's, you know. If it's, I'd like to be a successful MLS market. I think that would be fun. And Stan Kroenke moved the Rams from St. Louis and pissed off a lot of St. Louis Cardinals fans who are horrible human beings who've been given too much. So I like him for that. And this is fascinating stuff. I did not see this coming. I wonder if it's connected to him trying to punk Dean, like he comes into San Diego and becomes like even more of a champion.
It makes it work in San Diego where Dean couldn't
get stuff done.
Yes.
I don't know.
And then sends him packing back here.
Well, Midway Rising. I mean, we'll all rise together, right?
Well, one thing that I think is interesting is that, so all that city stuff where the Midway Rising is, that's up for lease now, or redevelopment now. The spot right next to it, which is 17 acres, which is kind of big, right? Midway, like all of that Midway Rising is like 50. 17 is still kind of big, but all that's city owned, like where Phil's Barbecue is and the Red Lobster.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's leasing until January of 2029. So at this point, that's like 5.5 years away.
Wow.
Jeez.
So they could just get rid of all that.
17 acres is enough to do a few things.
Yeah. And wow. A USL stadium? Is that? No. Who knows?
Yeah, as long as you have like a runway to hope, man, you can't say no.
Wow. Well, we'll be tracking that. Jesus. Yeah. I forgot about that. That's all. Yeah, that whole area is so fascinating. I mean, you know, on one hand, I like hanging out there late night, you know, after a Pechanga event, but, you know, you got to evolve. You got to change. Yeah. And
I think we're due. To me, it feels like we're due.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks for coming on, DK. How can we follow you on Twitter? What is it? Is it DK?
Yeah, at DK Aniwo, DIKEANYIWO. That's me.
And yeah, follow him for the updates on this thing, because it's going to get wild, I think, once we get this height limit thing completely squashed out. So thanks for listening to TKF United. We'll be back next time with a regular TKF episode. We'll talk about the Padres and how that's going. So that'll be fun.
Or not right, going, well, Nick, at this point, yeah.
Or not going. I don't know. We're just, it's bad, right? So, well, thanks again, DK. We'll talk to you next time. Keep the faith.
Guys. Thank you.
Bye.
TKF United.